You're listening to Midday Magazine on WAMC. I'm Patrick Donjas. This past week marked the 10th anniversary of the invasion of Iraq by U.S.-led coalition forces, the beginning of a war that, to date, has cost the lives of over 4,400 U.S. men and women in uniform and, by some estimates, over 130,000 Iraqi civilians. The war wasn't only a turning point for U.S. foreign policy and international relations with the Middle East. For many, it was also a personal turning point, including Bethlehem, New York native Kate Hoyt. I met Kate as a student at the State University of New York at Albany, where we were both studying journalism. However, unlike most of her fellow students, just a few years earlier, Kate had been in the middle of a war zone, having spent a year in Iraq as part of the Army's 301st Area Support Group from late 2004 to 2005, during a deadly escalation of insurgent violence prior to the so-called surge of U.S. troops in 2007. I called Kate last week to catch up and ask her about her experience in Iraq, her transition back to civilian life, and what she's been up to since graduating from UAlbany in 2010. Kate, who enlisted as a high school junior at age 17, was waiting tables at a local restaurant in Albany when she got the call that she'd be headed to Iraq.
I think I just stared at the phone and said, "Okay, thanks." And then I hung up and I stepped outside and cried for a minute.
Did you have any expectation when you joined that you would be going to war?
Well, okay, so at 17, what does a 17-year-old girl from the suburbs know about war? That word itself didn't mean anything to me. It was the only vision or image I had of war was of the first Gulf War when I was 6 years old, watching it in my living room. And I remember at one point my mom scooped me up, shut off the TV, and brought me into the bedroom. So I was totally shielded from it. I had no idea what it meant. So when I did join, the only warning order that my parents gave me was Katie, September 11th had just happened because I joined after September 11th. And they were there's a chance you could go to war. And I was whatever, I'm good. That's not going to happen to me. And sure enough, it did. And then I think when I got that phone call, it kind of sunk in.
Right. Suddenly you're going to be in Iraq.
Yeah. So at the age of 20, I find out that I'm going to be deployed overseas. And this is what I trained for. This is, what the military is, right? So I kind of, had my moment outside, called my family. My mom cried a little bit, and then, within a few months, I was training. My parents drove me to Queens, New York, and I met up with the unit that I would be deploying with. And at the time, I didn't know anyone. I was transferred into another unit. So the entire thing was a shock. But, it's the Army. They assimilate you very quickly.
So you're 20 years old. You're put in this situation where you're about to go to war with this new unit. Describe those first, those first couple days, and how did you get into the swing of things over there, or could you get into the swing of things?
Yeah, so the first meeting my unit, it's like when you walk into a new school and you don't know where to sit at the lunch table, and you're I don't know anyone. That's kind of how it felt, and then very quickly, you realize you all have the same uniform on. You all come from different parts of the country, so everyone is kind of in the same boat. And then we went to Fort Dix and trained for, about a month, month and a half, and then deployed in November into Kuwait for more training. And then from there, we flew into Iraq. And right when we got there, boots on the ground right before Thanksgiving, I was told that I was going to be doing public affairs. So immediately I jumped into the role of, photography and writing stories for our base newspaper at the time.
Why do you think you were assigned that role?
Well, I was assigned that role because I lied. I was supposed to be just doing paperwork and helping with computer stuff for the year. And I was this is going to be horrible if I just sit behind a desk for an entire year. So when we were training in Fort Dix, one of the majors at the time was does anyone here know how to write? And, I've done a couple of courses in high school, and I was I totally know how to write. And she's really? And I was yeah. So through training, she saw that I was motivated, did things that other people didn't want to. And eventually, when we got overseas, she was all right, I want you to work in the public affairs shop with us. So that was the best lie I ever told in my life, because through that, I discovered writing, photography, which eventually led me to the career I am today.
So tell me about what it's like to write and report for the base newspaper. What Does any particular day stick out in your mind? Was it always chaotic? Was it slow? What was the situation there when you were there?
So I guess a typical day would be you wake up, go to chow, do anything like that, and then you roll into the office. And I suppose it's kind of like a normal newsroom. I have my camera, I have assignments, I go out. But of course, you know, it's not safe. Our base was called Mortaritaville, so we would be always getting mortared. So that was like constant kind of pain. And my missions would range from doing a story on the Australian troops that work at the base hospital to a new movie that was coming out at the movie theater, which sounds really ridiculous. We had a movie theater, to heading out with a couple of civil affairs units because we just set up a new water treatment facility for Iraqis in a local village. Once I followed around the general into the base hospital, was heading out Purple Heart. And that was kind of one of the first shocks I had doing the job, because at the time I was kind of shielded from, you know, the destruction of the war. We were on one of the biggest bases, so we were kind of protected from everything. But, you know, I saw like a burnt Iraqi, like crying and screaming for his family. At the time, two American soldiers had been brought in on stretchers and bleeding because they just had been in a firefight or struck by an IED. And the job allowed me to see Iraq and the war on many different levels than just being like a young girl from the suburbs who just got thrown into something.
Were you ever pressured in terms of on a day like that when, you know, there's American casualties coming through the door and this type of violence occurring around you? Was there any orders or suggestions to keep the coverage light, or is there, you know, is there any type of shielding in that situation, trying to keep exactly what you were seeing watered down any, or was it just all straight coverage all the time?
For that particular moment when I was in the base hospital, the general who was handing out Purple Heart walked into the ER, and there's like blood on the floor, people are running around, and I'm standing there like feeling like a total jackass, like with my clean uniform and my camera, and he walks over to the soldiers and he shakes their hands and he looks at me to take a photograph, and I refused to do it because that was his moment to show that he was at war, but when in reality, like what did that guy do? You know, he just wanted to shake somebody's hand to show that he was there, and I refused to do it. I mean, there were other times where, you know, I attended a couple memorial services for, you know, one woman was killed in a convoy, and I went to Kuwait for another soldier who had committed suicide. And, you know, I was always just told, tell their story. I was given the freedom to do what I thought was right. I was never, you know, told only report positive news or report in a way that makes the U.S. military look perfect, because by all means, you know, we're not. You know, war is not perfect. So, no, I was pretty much given the freedom to do what I liked.
How long were you overseas?
So I deployed in November 2004 and came home around October, November 2005, so for a year.
We met in 2008, I want to say. Is that right? 2009?
No, it had to be 2008.
2008? All right.
I think so.
And my first memories of meeting you,
boy,
and my first impression of you was that you were very, very confident. And what struck me about you is that you had been put in this situation that I certainly, and I think that most of the people who we were in classes with at the University of Albany couldn't imagine being in Mortaritaville, if you will. And yet, you would exhibit at times a type of nervousness, and I'd try and reassure you and say, you know, come on, if you're under mortar attacks just a couple of years ago and now you're just walking around SUNY Albany, how could you possibly be that nervous about just walking into class? You know, what was it like? What was it like coming back and re-enrolling, and what were you feeling then?
I mean, of course I was nervous. Think about it. Like, just how you said, I'm coming back to a peer group that I'm supposed to be on, like, kind of the same page with, and I'm not by any means, right? So it's like I go from like this kind of rigid, like I wake up at this time, do this, I wear a uniform, this is my job, I have a mission and a purpose, and this is what I do. And I come back where there's no structure. You know, my family was kind of uprooted by the war, so I'm like trying to get everyone back on their feet. And I come in with a bunch of like cool college kids, and I'm like, you know, where do I sit in class? You know, I like sitting in the back, you know, with my back against the wall because I don't like stuff behind me. And it's just like, you know, I had to do my homework. And it was scary. You guys are intimidating. So, I mean, yeah, of course I'm nervous. Like, I'm in grad school now and I still feel that way. I never wanted to be, I mean, obviously I talk openly about my service, but I never wanted to be pegged as like the weird girl who like went to war and now, you know, is trying to get her degree.
I don't think you were ever pegged as that weird girl.
No, I know. But I mean, a lot of veterans, just not me, a lot of veterans, you know, come back into the classroom and they're like, well, wow, where do I fit? And it's not because I don't want to fit in. It took a while to realize that I do fit in and that people can learn from my experience and I can just learn from hanging out with my fellow students.
Did you feel stigmatized at all when you got to Albany by students or professors, either or?
No. You know what? SUNY Albany was seriously the best decision I ever made. You know, the professors were so welcoming. They helped me with my writing. You know, they were my mentors. And like all of you guys, you always asked questions and allowed me to, like, you know, be my weird self in the corner. And I wholeheartedly, like, love school. And it helped me more than anything.
So you made it through the war. You made it through mm-hmm. your time there. You made it through Albany, and you mentioned that you're in grad school now and you're working for the VA. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so because of my war experience, I fell in love with writing, and when I came home, I enrolled at UAlbany and studied journalism and fell more in love with it. And by the time I graduated, I was offered a job in D.C. to work for the Department of Veterans Affairs and Online Communications. They didn't really have an office at the time, and when I initially came home, backtrack a little bit, I had started writing my own blog and writing about my experiences, so that kind of caught the eyes of some people. So that is kind of how I wound up with a job in D.C. So I literally, a month after I graduated, I packed up with one single suitcase and jumped on the train and came down here. And that's been about 2 years. And I'm still doing online communications, writing, do photography every now and then. And then I recently was accepted into the nonfiction writing program at Johns Hopkins University. So I'm working on my graduate degree there.
Congratulations. That's great.
Thanks.
And now I just saw just recently that you've also been accepted on the Defense Council of the Truman National Security Project. Is that correct?
Yes.
So tell me about that. What's that going to entail?
So from what I gather, it's a leadership development program for those who've served in the military and pretty much have a desire and ability to like influence policy and politics and public opinion. And I'm also a Pat Tillman military scholar. I absolutely adore the foundation, so they're helping me with school.
Do you have any desire or any prospects right now to go into policy, public service, elected or not, based on your acceptance into the Truman Project?
Yeah, you know, we'll see. I still secretly want to be in the FBI. So I don't know. I'm just going to finish my degree, and that's going to be about one more year, and then we'll see what happens.
Well, Kate, I consider you a friend, and you are certainly my go-to on anything veteran-related that I don't understand, which is often the case. I can't thank you enough for coming on with me today, and good luck, and I hope to talk to you soon.
Of course. Thank you for having me.